Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Roto-World Football Podcast. Again, this is a double dose with Evan Silva. As you know, a couple weeks ago, we did the AFC outlook in terms of looking at each AFC roster with a bit of a fantasy lens. Now we're going to do it with the NFC. And this one is the NFC South. And the NFC West. With the NFC South, we'll be talking about Kelvin Benjamin coming back from that knee injury, almost a year out from there. Devontae Freeman, can he build on what he did last year with perhaps a better roster around him? Mike Evans and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. How optimistic is too optimistic with Mike Evans now in year three? And why Evan is all in on Drew Brees with this New Orleans Saints team. Then we'll shift over to the NFC West and talk about Doug Baldwin's emergence last season and why it was due to a shift in Seattle's passing game, why Michael Floyd is the wide receiver to own in the Arizona Cardinals offense, how the Rams staff is kind of the eternal optimist of NFL news at this time of year and how their projections are completely outlandish. And then we'll finish with Sean Drone with the San Francisco 49ers and why he's a bit undervalued at the moment. So with that, here's my conversation with Evan. All right, Evan, just like we started with the AFC South and AFC West in the last podcast, which was the Denver Broncos, obviously the Super Bowl champions, we have to go to their foe in the Super Bowl.
And in week one.
That's a good point. I didn't even think about that. I'm still recovering, Evan, from that Super Bowl loss. And that is to the Carolina Panthers, a team that I've had season tickets to since 1995, Evan. That first season was in Clemson. But I want to hear your thoughts. I know we said that I was going to start with this. But, Evan, I want to know, with Kelvin Benjamin coming back, this is an offense who last year, outside of the tight end position, their wide receiver core was led by Ted Ginn Jr., Philly Brown, Jericho Cotchery, and I guess an emerging Devin Funchess. But Kelvin, what's interesting is, and kind of the part I want to get to, is a lot of people have been kind of riding the Devin Funchess bandwagon this offseason. People loving what they're hearing out of camp, what they're reading out of camp.
He exceeded expectations for a lot of people that were down on him after his final season at Michigan, where, you know, he seemed to lack a my ball mentality. He was a really inconsistent player. I mean, he would look the part sometimes, and at other times he would look like he was loafing. But he was also a super, super young prospect,
right,
coming out. And so, you know, I think you got to kind of give him a pass. And we're just evaluating him based on what he's done in the NFL. And after a really, really difficult start to his rookie season, I remember there was one point he had as many drops as he had catches. Like, it was six drops and six catches to begin the rookie season, which of course was a super small sample size, but it was still like, you know, it was still like he wasn't making the most of his opportunities. He made the most of his opportunities thereafter. So definitely, I'm very interested to see what his role will be this year. They lost Jericho Cotchery. You mentioned the potential for Funchess to play some more in the slot. Right. And he can create mismatches there. And I don't like, for me, he's probably still going to be a complementary receiver in what ultimately boils down to a run first offense, where they're going to have a lot of positive game flow and they're going to be able to run the ball. So I don't think his target projection should be particularly high. But I think where he's going in drafts is makes sense, you know, as long as he goes in that 11th to 14th round range. I mean, I think he's worth a certainly worth a flyer there. And I mean, I'm definitely higher on him right now than I was following his final season at Michigan, quite a bit higher.
And I did want to get to that run first offense. But quickly, I want to say that we know how candid Cam can be. And he talked about almost throughout the entire season last year how Funchess, and he joked about this in the media, how he had no clue what he was doing in the huddle, on the field, anything like that. So just from a narrative standpoint, being under the system for a year and understanding his and his role in the offense should help him at least stay on the field in those situations. But the run first offense, I absolutely agree with you. Now, does that mean you want to target the team's lead ball carrier in Jonathan Stewart, who has only had, what, 2 10 touchdown seasons, and those were his first two seasons in the league, and has only one 1,000-yard rushing year, and that was his second year in the league?
And the other thing is that he doesn't catch passes.
Right.
You know, I think he had 16 catches last year. I mean, I you know, Jonathan Stewart had a really solid season for the Panthers this year. He has very little competition for work. I mean, Cameron Artis Payne, I don't think he's very good. You know, Fozzie Whitaker, like, they didn't make any additions at running back. And so that kind of solidifies Jonathan Stewart's role for another season. But he doesn't score a lot of touchdowns. He's barely involved in the passing game. And so even though his role is really secure, he doesn't give you very much fantasy upside. So I think where he goes in drafts right now, sixth, seventh round, that makes sense. You really, you know, you're not aiming very high when you draft Jonathan Stewart. You're getting a solid floor, assuming he stays healthy, of course. Right. You're getting a solid floor, and you're not getting touchdown or receiving upside.
But if you go receiver in what, the first 4 or 5 rounds, he might be a target there in the 6th or 7th, like you mentioned.
Absolutely, he's going to get you usage at running back. You know, he's going to get you, you know, depending on the format, he's going to get you, you know, 9 to 13 fantasy points per week. And when your early round wide receivers are carrying you, Jonathan Stewart is very useful in that kind of an approach. And he consistently goes 6th, 7th round. I mean, I have not seen him go any earlier than right. that.
Cam was a steal last year for where you got him in fantasy drafts because of the loss of Kelvin Benjamin prior to most drafts. Is he going to be too rich for you to be taken so early in this year?
He is, but the quarterback field as a whole has really fallen down in terms of their average draft position because people are realizing, you know, it's not smart to take quarterbacks early. So there's certainly a point in drafts where I'm very willing to consider Cam Newton, and that probably starts in the 5th round. But I'm sure, you know, more casual leagues, the people that are drafting right now are a little bit sharper. But in casual leagues, you know, your home league, I mean, you might see Cam Newton go in the 2nd round. It's just he's not even on my radar at that point.
Let's move on to the Atlanta Falcons. And Evan, I want to get your take now after seeing what Devontae Freeman did last year. My guy, Devontae Freeman. are you finally a believer? Or
no,
are you skeptical?
I liked him coming out of college, but it looked like the NFL. No, I was with you. Josh,
I know, I'm
kidding. But
the
NFL looked too big for him as a rookie. I mean, one of his calling cards at Florida State was that he was an excellent pass blocker.
Yep.
And that was going to lead to him getting work, you know, maybe right out of the gate. And he was bad in pass protection as a rookie. He was involved in this 4-way RBBC with Steven Jackson and Antone Smith and Jacquizz Rodgers. You know, two of those guys are out of the league. The other one, Jacquizz Rodgers, is hanging on with Chicago and might be out of the league by September. You know, and I mean, he wasn't efficient with his carries.
Right. But now.
So, but now, I mean, he, and then to open last season, he theoretically got beaten out by Tevin Coleman, who started week one, had 20 carries for 80 yards against Philadelphia, looked en route to a big monster game against the Giants in week two. He had a touchdown early in the game. He was a super popular DFS play that week. And then he fractured his ribs or a rib and missed the next 2 weeks. And Devonta Freeman ran away with the job. At this point, Devonta Freeman is one of the safest fantasy picks at the running back position. For as safe as a running back pick can be, Devonta Freeman is one of the safest, because even if Tevin Coleman starts to work in a little bit more, Devonta Freeman is going to be the passing game back. This is not a team that's going to play with many leads. And I don't know that Tevin Coleman necessarily is a clock killing back anyway. He's a straight line, big play threat.
Yep.
Right. And then Devonta Freeman was so much better on the goal line than Tevin Coleman last year. Tevin Coleman, and we're dealing in small sample sizes, of course, but Tevin Coleman executed just one of his five carries inside the 5 yard line for a touchdown. Devonta Freeman executed five of his 11 carries inside the 5 yard line. So I think that Devonta Freeman's goal line role is secure and his passing game role is absolutely secure. So even if Tevin Coleman earns a little bit more of the rushing work, I mean, Devonta Freeman is going to be the lead back in this offense, barring injury. Mm-hmm. He's one of my favorite second round fantasy picks this year, obviously, particularly in PPR. And I don't think that he's that much diminished in non-PPR either.
I've seen a lot of fantasy content out there this offseason saying that Devonta Freeman can't keep up what he did last year, even come close to it. And so I'm happy to hear you say that, Evan. And theoretically, this offensive line should be better with the addition of Alex Mack at center in free agency. I don't think you'll be as optimistic about Mohamed Sanu's outlook this season, even though they paid him a boatload of money this offseason from the Cincinnati Bengals to be their second receiver opposite Julio Jones.
Right. But I do kind of like him where he goes in drafts, because he has a really secure role and he goes really late. I mean, and if he, because nobody's really high on his talent, and I'm not high on his talent, but again, this is a team that's going to have to throw the football.
Right.
Number one. Number two, they don't really have clarity at tight end. They don't really have anybody else that is going to threaten for big time targets at wide receiver beyond Julio. I mean, I think Justin Hardy is okay, you know, and I think that he will have some moments in the slot. But first of all, they were a two tight end offense last year. I'm not even sure they're going to run a lot of three receiver sets. I mean, Sanu is going to be in there. He's going to be on the field and they're going to be throwing the ball. And if Julio gets hurt, then Sanu becomes a legitimate fantasy asset. So on the surface, just the way everything sets up right now, I don't think Mohamed Sanu is going to have a big season, but I wouldn't rule it out. And I wouldn't rule him out, you know, of being a guy that gets 110 targets and catches 75 passes and, you know, is a guy that you can pick up off the waiver wire and use during bye weeks and then if Julio gets hurt, then Sanu becomes an every week fantasy starter.
Let's move on to the New Orleans Saints. Brandon Cooks, I would say personally that he didn't really take the next step last season. He kind of is who he is, and I'm not sure if he can be a focal point of a passing offense in the NFL. Maybe you disagree with that. But they do keep trying to add around him. I think Willie Snead is one of the more interesting names from last season. Maybe has already hit his ceiling, but I think was somewhat consistent there. Then you add Michael Thomas in the draft, in the second round, I believe, a big body wide receiver, I think might play the slot, and then pay Kobe Fleener in free agency, which I don't have anything to say about. But Evan, do you think that Brandon Cooks will be helped because of this, or do you think we should just expect what we saw from him last year?
I think that he will have his big games. You know, I think that they will come and they'll be a little difficult to predict. If you remember, but before last season, when the Saints offense was really firing on all cylinders, they had a lot of different guys. You know, they had DeVerry Henderson, they had Robert Meacham, they had Colston, they had Jimmy Graham, they had Lance Moore. And that's what this offense looks like it's going to be to me again. And it's going to be a situation, I think, where receivers are going to struggle for weekly consistency. And I think people will be frustrated week to week by them. I think that a lot of the guys will end up with, you know, quote unquote, their numbers in the end. And I think that a lot of guys will have good seasons. For me, like the guy who I want to draft in this offense, well, I like Mark Ingram, But the guy that I want to draft in this offense is Drew Brees, because that gives me exposure to all these big play weapons. And I think Drew Brees is going to have a really, really big year. I think he's going to have one of the best years of his career. He showed that after a rough start early last year, he was battling a shoulder injury. I mean, he was just as good as any quarterback outside of Cam in fantasy. Of course, they play indoors. They have a great schedule. You know, they have a bad defense. I mean, I think Drew Brees is going to light it up, and he's undervalued in drafts. I don't call quarterbacks undervalued very often, but he is. Right now in NFL 10s, the earliest you see him go is seventh round. He's my second highest owned quarterback behind Tyrod Taylor. I mean, I love drafting Drew Brees in the eighth round of drafts, whether it be redraft or NFL 10s. Love Drew Brees this year.
They have attempted to have a more talented defense this year. I won't say it's going to be better, but more talented. Do you think that will impact the offense at all? Because last year it was a historically bad, in terms of NFL history, this defense that they put out in the field.
I think it's going to be bad again. You know, I think Rankins was a good pick. You know, I like that they added Fairley. They lost Kikaha.
Don't forget about James Laurinaitis, man.
I mean, you know,
he can make some really great tackles 8 yards down the field, Evan. I think
you've right, seen that. Right. No, so we're definitely going to be targeting Saints games in daily fantasy like we always do, you know, whether it's the Saints themselves or it's the other team. It's going to be another high scoring season.
So
sure.
I have another. I do want to talk about Cody Fleener, though, Evan, because, I mean, they paid him like he's going to be a major part of this offense. Kobe mm-hmm. Fleener, he's absolutely athletic in a straight line, fast in a straight line. And we've seen him get open in a straight line down the seam. But then there are just plays where it's unimaginable how he screws them up in terms of drops, touchdowns, anything. However, do you think that he can match what Ben Watson put out last year? Or do you think that they're just drastically different players that it's kind of a wait and see mode? Or are you into Kobe Fleener, of where his ADP is right now?
Well, actually, his ADP has risen above a little bit where I was getting him. Like I was getting him a lot early on in the eighth and ninth rounds, and now people have started to take him in the sixth round. I mean, they're going to throw the ball a ton. They have a great quarterback. I think he'll be just like the rest of the passing options there. I think he'll be a little up and down week to week, but I think he'll have a good season. We saw what Ben Watson did, came out of nowhere last year, you know, and Kobe Fleener is a lot younger and more athletic than Ben Watson for all his right. shortcomings as a player. I mean, they're not going to ask him to be an inline blocker. You know, they're not going to ask him to block. I know he's had some drops like that people, you know, play on, you know, they put into GIFs and, you know, everybody looks at it and is like, oh my God, you know, he dropped that pass. But he's also made a lot of big plays. Actually, in 2014, Kobe Fleener was the number six overall fantasy tight end. And whenever Dwayne Allen was out in Indianapolis, Kobe Fleener was like a top five fantasy tight end play that given week. And that continued into last season. So, I mean, I think Kobe Fleener is going to be good in fantasy. I have him as a top five or six fantasy tight end right now. I'm not willing to take him in the sixth round, but when he starts to slide into the later seventh and the eighth, I will definitely look at him.
How, moving on to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, is it possible to be too optimistic about Mike Evans this season?
So I may be a little bit biased here because I traded away Mike Evans in a dynasty league to fantasy douche, our dynasty league.
Right.
So I'm human. You know, I have biases. We discussed the Notre Dame bias last time, even though that doesn't really affect my evaluations. But I'm sort of looking at Mike Evans through a glass half empty lens right now. And I think that Mike Evans can be as good as he wants to be.
He left a ton of production on the field last season, I think.
Left a ton of production on the field last season. You know, what if he just maxes out as a Vincent Jackson type who catches, you know, 75 passes last year, has some, you know, decent TD scoring seasons, but never really an elite fantasy receiver. I could see that playing out. I mean, it's just, I feel like his range of outcomes is wide. And for as poor an on-field season as Mike Evans had last year, I don't think that people people haven't adjusted where they're drafting him. He still goes second round consistently, even though he didn't play all that well last year. And that's kind of out of the norm. So he's not a guy that I'm getting at all in fantasy. You got Vincent Jackson. He's going to be healthy. Mike Evans' target totals were vastly skewed, greatly skewed when Vincent Jackson was out of the lineup last year as opposed to when he was in the lineup. And maybe Vincent Jackson will get hurt again, whatever. But Vincent Jackson is healthy right now. They're still going to want to run the football a lot.
Right.
So I actually am not.
So what receivers
there with Mike Evans?
What receivers around the area where Mike Evans is going right now do you prefer?
He goes second round, so I'm willing to take Jordy Nelson. Absolutely, Keenan Allen. Keenan Allen, I'd take 10 times out of 10 over Mike Evans. Jordy Nelson. I'm trying to think of some other names off the top of my head. Allen Robinson, of course, Dez Bryant. Those guys are borderline first round picks, though.
Okay.
So those are some of the. I mean, and I'm looking at Jamal Charles. I definitely take Jamal Charles over Mike Evans. I take Devonta Freeman over Mike Evans.
Okay.
Just a guy that I'm letting other people draft this year, and I very well could be wrong here. I mean, I loved Mike Evans coming out. Loved him after his rookie season. Still really like him. I do have a little bit of a bias that I'm sort of rooting against him this year, but I also feel like that's derived from his on-field play.
So who did you trade him for? Now that I'm curious, I can't even remember.
I traded him.
Is this
I don't know. It was
embarrass you now or what?
No, it was a really really big trade, so it's hard to remember. But I got back AJ Green, Kobe Fleener, your guy, and Torrey Smith, and I gave up Mike Evans, Martavis Bryant, a bunch of draft picks, and Jeremy Langford.
Got it. So last year, this was kind of a two-prong approach in the backfield with Doug Martin and Charles Sims. Personally, I absolutely think Doug Martin is far more talented than Charles Sims. Do you expect Doug Martin, if he stays healthy, to easily lead this backfield in carries? Do you think they want to continue to go with the two running back approach?
I think they'll definitely try to use the two running back approach. I mean, they just invested a lot of money into Doug Martin, and
right.
I think they want to keep him around. He's also not that young. I mean, he was a little on the older side coming out of Boise State. I want to say he's 27 right now. So I think and Charles Sims was good, averaged almost 5 yards per carry, did benefit from a lot of. You know, he doesn't run against the base defense.
Correct.
Very often. But he's really good in the passing game. I mean, he deserves snaps. He's a good player. And if they want to open up the passing game a little bit more, which I'm not so sure that they will do, I actually would guess that they won't do that. But if they do, then Charles Sims is going to be the guy that sees an uptick in snaps and touches.
You could move on to the NFC West.
Yeah.
Let's start off with the Arizona Cardinals. Last year, David Johnson won many fantasy leagues for many people. It seems now he's one of the top, two or three running backs drafted?
Yes.
Can you count on, one, taking a running back that early, and two, if that's the case, counting on David Johnson, who we don't even have a full season as a starting running back under his belt?
Right, so we have been burned by these, half season wonders relentlessly in fantasy. Yeah, I mean, C.J. Anderson, Jeremy Hill, those are two that just pop to mind. But this happens every year. I think David Johnson is different because he is
a freak.
Gonna be the lead back in one of the best offenses in football.
Right,
and I know that there is one beat writer in particular that believes Chris Johnson is going to start over David Johnson.
Wow.
Well, I brought that to the attention of another beat writer who I trust a little bit more. And he was like, that guy, he should know better than that. Mm. So,
And Bruce Arians, and I think one reason why it took David Johnson so long, and I've actually watched some of that All or Nothing show. I don't know if you have, Evan, on Amazon Prime. I mean, Bruce Arians is notorious for and kind of like John Fox for not playing rookies very often, especially on offense early on in their careers. He doesn't want to put too much on their plate. He doesn't want their ego to get too high. And he said that so often here with David Johnson that we can't give him as much as we want to because we kind of have to, you know, step him along at a slow pace. But now that he's arrived, I think I'm right there with you in terms of he's going to get this full workload in offense that loves to attack vertically, that loves to use three receiver sets, that will face many sub-package defenses. And then you have a complete freak of an athlete in David Johnson, who I would even say might be better out in space with as a receiver catching the ball than he is between the tackles. That's an outstanding combination for a guy that can be a true three down back in an offense.
He is, and they know how to use him. I mean, they run him to the perimeter, you know, and they use him in the passing game. And I think what one thing that was interesting that I was looking at, because I did this Cardinals team fantasy preview, was that the offense kind of changed when David Johnson took over as the RB. And I mean, you can go back and watch David Johnson's catches. A lot of them are like drags coming over the middle. You know, he makes a lot of his catches in the middle of the field.
Yeah.
And Larry Fitzgerald, actually, his targets plummeted when David Johnson, because Larry Fitzgerald is a slot receiver.
Right now, yes.
And yeah. And when David Johnson was not the Cardinal starter, I mean, Larry Fitzgerald was getting over 11 targets a game. And then when David Johnson took over, Larry Fitzgerald was the third most targeted receiver in that three receiver set. Michael Floyd actually led the Cardinals in targets after David Johnson took over at RB. So that makes me like Michael Floyd a little bit more. He would be the number one receiver that I would target in Arizona, also has the contract year narrative. And then I think I like John Brown the second. I actually like Larry Fitzgerald third, if we were to draft those guys in order.
Yeah, and I always go back to this play against the Panthers, actually, that David Johnson ran. I think it was like a 3rd and 11. And they kind of clear out all the wide receivers in terms of pushing them upfield and then using him, like you said, in a drag out in the middle and just letting him run after the catch.
That's almost indefensible.
Yeah. Definitely.
I mean, you got to have like Luke Kuechly or maybe Sean Lee.
They couldn't stop it. Actually, he got a first down. He got 12 yards on the play, which is amazing. There you go. All right, let's move on to the now Los Angeles Rams. This is an interesting offense. Maybe interesting is the wrong word, but if Jared Goff doesn't start as a rookie, it's unfathomable. But then you have perhaps maybe, I wouldn't say the most talented young running back in the league, but absolutely one of, and Todd Gurley. And I wouldn't argue with anyone who said he was. But he's running behind an offensive line that is now made up of a lot of second-year players. Probably was better as a run-blocking offensive line than pass protecting. But we know that he put together a number of massive, massive weeks. If he stays healthy, I think the expectations are tremendously high for obviously for Todd Gurley in year two.
Yeah, you know, we have something that people refer to as coach speak. With the Rams, they may have the stupidest team speak in the entire NFL. You remember when they tried to sell us on Case Keenum as a top 10 quarterback based on analytics?
I have some things to say about that I'll talk to you about off air. But yes, I do think that was a lot of Les Snead being Les Snead and maybe not the head coach being as into it as he was.
Well, they also try to tell us that Tavon Austin is going to catch 100 balls this year. They also try to tell us that Case Keenum might enter the season as their starting quarterback. You know, just so annoying to listen to this annual 7-9 team telling us stupid things like we're stupid.
And now we get it on Hard Knocks too.
We're stupid. Oh, yeah. I think everyone knows how this offense is going to operate, and it's going to be put the ball in Todd Gurley's belly and, you know, try to get the ball into Tavon Austin's hands. You know, I made fun of the idea that he might catch 100 balls this year, but I do like him in fantasy. I mean, where he scored 9 touchdowns last year, which he probably isn't going to score 9 TDs again. But, you know, they figured out how to get him the rock. He has always had big play ability. They don't really have a perimeter receiver presence.
Right.
you know, even with the quarterback upgrade, I mean, the quarterback upgrade bodes well.
We think.
I think Jared Goff can be better than what they had last season. They had what, Nick Foles and Case Keenum.
Yeah.
So I think that even if Jared Goff isn't very good as a rookie, he's still an upgrade over what they had last year. And I like that for Tavon Austin. You get Tavon Austin in the eighth round every single time. And Todd Gurley, you know, he's so freaking good. Like, I don't want to bet against this dude.
He's really good.
He's awesome. I mean, I could come up with concerns. You know, how many touchdowns is the Rams offense going to score? How many passes is he going to catch? You know, the Rams have this weird infatuation with Benny Cunningham as their passing down specialist, and that eats into Todd Gurley's targets. But the dude is incredible. You know, he has a bad schedule, but the dude is, he's a special, special player, and he's going to have monster weeks, and he's going to get the ball consistently. And he's, for as strong a running back pick can be, he is about as strong as it gets.
There wasn't much to say last year about the 49ers offense. You had Blaine Gabbert at quarterback. You had Torrey Smith not really producing for one of the first times in his career. But now, obviously, with Chip Kelly, there's a lot of intrigue and maybe upside to pick from on this offense. Just give me – and I talked with Rich Rebar about it last week. Again, after this podcast, you want to go back and listen to that. He also wrote a great piece on RotoWorld about kind of the coaching carousel and how Chip Kelly moving to the 49ers shapes their offense. Pick and choose. Carlos Hyde, Torrey Smith, maybe some other pieces in that offense. Bruce Ellington. Which pieces are you intrigued by this year?
So I think based on what we kind of know and how it is best to evaluate the 49ers offense, this is how I think things are going to kind of go. The 49ers have the worst Vegas win total in the NFC. They're at 5 games. Only the Browns across the NFL have a lower one. They're at 4.5. The 49ers are going to run a ton of plays. They're going to play from behind. Mm-hmm. Their offensive line is trash. So much so that they're hoping that this Anthony Davis guy, who wasn't even that great when he was playing, comes back. Yeah. they signed Zane Beatles, who the Jaguars cut because he wasn't good enough. Right. He's terrible. They're counting on this center, Daniel Kilgore, who like never plays. Their right guard is Josh Garnett. What did you think of Josh Garnett?
He's a better run blocker than he is pass protector, but he's, to me, it's interesting because Chip Kelly, I think a lot of one of the reasons that the Eagles rushing offense struggled so much last year is because their guards and their guard combination played terribly. Like the interior of that pocket, the fabric of the pocket or the offensive line was horrendous. So to me, it lends itself to saying, hey, maybe he learned from that mistake. He doesn't fit the athletic profile that Kelly looks for in the offensive line. So maybe it was more some of the other people in there. But at least he actually wants talent at the guards and their guard combination, which I think is an improvement over his final year with the Eagles.
And this and then at right tackle, it's a battle between Eric Pierce, and who is horrible, and Trent Brown, who is like a 49ers fan favorite because he's just a mammoth of a man.
From Florida, yeah. I remember. He was like 380 pounds or something, just massive.
Yeah, and there are some GIFs out there of him just like pancaking guys.
You have never sounded older when you say GIFs instead of either GIFs or GIFs. I want to get to the bottom of this GIF story, Evan. Is this just something where you're just out of touch with the 20-somethings of the world?
I mean, I'm old, man. I'm losing my hair, you know.
Well, I am too, and I'm only 28. But, okay, I do want to bring up Bruce Ellington, though, because this is a
– this leads me to this, dude. So I think we have a formula for a team that's going to be playing from behind that isn't going to be able to run block. And that's horrible for Carlos Hyde. And I think we also have a formula for a team that's going to throw a lot more than it hopes to. And a lot of those throws are going to be quick passes. Mm-hmm. And who right now is their projected slot receiver?
Bruce Ellington.
Indeed.
My guy that I forgot that was my guy. You and I had a conversation a couple weeks ago. And you're like, you really like Bruce Ellington coming out of South Carolina. I was like, I don't remember at all. And then I looked at my rankings, and that whole offseason, that whole draft season, I talked up Devontae Freeman. I talked up Jarvis Landry, a few other guys that were in that same area. And right smack dab in the middle of those two, I had Bruce Ellington ranked. And maybe it's because he didn't have an opportunity early in his career. I completely forgot about it, but I'm excited now that he does have an opportunity if I can take a few steps back and rekindle my love for his game.
Yeah, so I think there's going to be a lot of targets to go around in this offense. And I think that Sean Drawn is a sleeper. I mean, Carlos Definitely. Hyde has never caught passes. I think
all the way back to Ohio State, he never did.
Yeah, so there's some rhetoric about him maybe catching passes this year, but you know, when push comes to shove, like Chip Kelly used role-specific running backs at Oregon. He did, you know, in Philadelphia with Darren Sproles. You know, I'm not into Carlos Hyde at all. And, you know, we'll see how that goes. But I think that all the evidence leads me to, you know, that is the best way to approach him. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's going to be a lot of short targets, Sean Drawn, Bruce Ellington. I think that Torrey Smith, even though he's a perimeter player, he should get a lot of targets as well. And Vance McDonald, I think, is a little bit interesting at tight end.
I won't even follow up on that Vance McDonald comment. Because to me, like, I'm just amazed he has hands because half the time I don't see it.
Well, he had some decent weeks last year.
Not to be a jerk, but they really might be prosthetics. Like, I'm not sure he actually has hands. Like, it's just – it just goes right through there sometimes.
That's true. All that is true.
let's end up this podcast with the final team, which is the Seattle Seahawks. Doug Baldwin just caught on fire last year down the stretch. Believe he signed a new contract. There's no way we can expect the same thing. So do we expect Tyler Lockett to kind of eat up some of those targets and receiving share that Baldwin really had for himself last season, at the end of last season?
Tyler Lockett, Matt Harmon's breakout receiver of the season.
Yes. His new, not the new Allen Robinson, but maybe the closest thing since Allen Robinson.
And before Matt Harmon made that announcement, it was like just a random Wednesday night or something. And I'm in a dynasty league with Harmon, and he starts sending me like aggressive trade offers for Tyler Lockett. And I'm like,
but before he puts out this piece of content that's going to blow up.
Right. And I'm like, oh my God, like what is going on here? And then I looked at his Twitter, and he was like, I found my Allen Robinson. And I was like, oh man, it's Tyler Lockett.
You
could have
spoiled it for everyone.
Right. Right. But, you know, so the Seahawks offense changed after their bye week last year, which I believe was week 8. And it wasn't so much that they became a high volume passing offense. Mm-hmm. It was that they changed their offense to become more of a pass oriented offense. And what I mean by that is they took a lot more, you know, they shortened the dropbacks for Russell Wilson, a lot more three step stuff. They went three wide on over 80% of their snaps, which is definitely not something that they had done, you know, previous to that. They just changed the way that they kind of approached, and they threw the ball in more higher leverage situations. You know, they throw the ball more in the red zone. So Russell Wilson just completely murdered. Right. You know, and so did Doug Baldwin. And I think we will see. I mean, Pete Carroll has said that they still want to remain a run based team, a team that runs the ball a lot. But I think that it will be a pass to get the lead and then run the ball to, you know, put their opponent away. And, you know, whereas, you know, when they had Marshawn Lynch to lean on,
right.
You know, it was a little bit different.
And we all think it's going to be Thomas Rawls, but he's coming off an injury. And then they drafted three running backs. And they drafted C.J. Procise, who your Notre Dame bias points to him being a good player. But he is a good player. I will say that. Alex Collins, who people liked as kind of a slower but aggressive running back out of Arkansas. And then Zach Brooks, who's a pass-catching running back, kind of a third-down role at Clemson. But, I mean, is it going to be Thomas Rawls? What's the news pointing to right now?
I remember when Zach Brooks got drafted, and you were the only person on Twitter who had ever heard of him.
He actually – okay, this is a funny story. I did a blurb that Zach Brooks, after his playing days at Clemson, because he left 1 year early, wanted to go into interior design. Like, he started
I read that.
He started watching HGTV, and this is like his big hobby now. So maybe he'll at least stick around for a few. Maybe that locker room will look totally different at the end of the year, Evan. Maybe he'll just reshape it.
Maybe. Yeah, I mean, that's a red flag on Thomas Rawls for sure. The three drafted running backs,
right.
The fact that he can't get on the practice field, the fact that Pete Carroll, who paints the rosiest pictures for injury situations of any coach in the league, is unwilling to commit. He's like, I hope that Thomas Rawls is ready for week one.
Yeah, he's saying like Jimmy Graham's going to be ready for like to the start of the season, and not saying that about Thomas Rawls. Am I correct in saying that?
Pretty much. He said that Thomas Rawls is behind, or that Jimmy Graham's recovery is ahead of Thomas Rawls.
Right. Which is hard to believe.
Right. So, you know, I don't really know what to do with the running back situation. I'm not really taking anybody right now. I mean, CJ Prosize's ADP has jumped into like the eighth round. Thomas Rawls still goes fourth, fifth round. Hmm. You know, I'm just letting other people take those guys. You know, and I really am not going to pretend to act like I know how it's going to play out.
Right. I do want to say this. I did hear this offseason that the reason that this offense kind of sputtered to start last year in terms of the passing offense was the loss of the center, Max Unger, who they traded, obviously, for Jimmy Graham. And Unger made a ton of the calls, a lot of the protection calls, which obviously a lot of centers do across the league. And so that kind of rotating position that they had at that center spot was never solidified. And until Russell Wilson kind of got comfortable with it himself, the offense didn't blast off. And you mentioned it. It was kind of after the bye week where it started happening, and they changed some things. Now, the offensive line is kind of musical chairs again. I mean, you have Justin Britt, who's a former second-round pick who played tackle, then guard, maybe now starting at center. Is starting at center. A rookie first-round pick, Jermaine Ifedi at right guard, a former Spark superstar in Gary Gilliam at left tackle, who I think played there last year. Or he was right tackle. Okung is gone. So, I mean, this is a team that, for as good as they are,
the offensive line entering this season looks worse than the offensive line that was entering last season.
Which is absolutely telling, because they got demolished by some teams in the interior.
They're going to keep doing the three-step drop stuff.
Okay, Evan, we're going to end this podcast the same way that we did the last two. Give me one guy that you didn't say enough about that you are much higher on, or just higher on, or optimistic about for this upcoming season.
Well, we didn't discuss Doug Baldwin and Tyler Lockett that much, I guess, other than mentioning that Harmon loves Tyler Lockett.
Then go for it.
Yeah. So I think you have to expect regression for, you know, in terms of touchdowns for Doug Baldwin. I mean, he had 14 last year. He had, I think, 14 in his previous three NFL seasons, or 12 or something like that. And so you have to expect some regression there. I'm not touching Jimmy Graham. I don't touch guys coming off ruptured patellar tendons. That worked real well with Victor Cruz last year. It has worked with, you know, many players in the past. Even if Jimmy Graham falls to the 14th round, I'm still not touching him. But I think that Doug Baldwin and Russell Wilson and Tyler Lockett, even for where they go, and it seems early for Doug Baldwin to go in the fifth round, but I don't think it's that early for him. I think he's a good pick. He's not going to score 14 TDs anymore, or, you know, again this season, but he could easily score, you know, 8 to 10, especially if Jimmy Graham is not much of a factor in the red zone. So, and that, I mean, they draw plays up for him in the red zone. You know, right. They'll do rub routes with Doug Baldwin for sure. And he's got that on-field chemistry with Russell Wilson, which is something that sometimes is difficult to quantify, but never underrate, you know, on-field chemistry with a receiver. In the past is, you know, has gotten me burned on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You always want to gravitate towards that, man. And then I think Tyler Lockett caught like 250 balls at Kansas State. You don't do that just being a vertical guy. That's how he was used primarily last season. He can do more, and we will see more of that from him. And then Jermaine Kearse is a guy that I wouldn't totally write off. He's going to be on the field. This is going to be a three-receiver team, as we've discussed. He's not as talented as Doug Baldwin or Jermaine or Tyler Lockett, but he's going to have a role in the offense, and he's going to have some solid weeks. I mean, I do believe that this offense will continue to be pass-oriented, not necessarily super pass-heavy. You know, they're not going to be the Saints, but there are going to be opportunities for Jermaine Kearse to make plays, and he costs about an 18th round pick in MFL 10s right now. And I mean, I think that, you know, at such a low cost for a guy in an explosive passing offense who's going to be on the field and get chances, I love Jermaine Kearse in best ball leagues.
So if I could answer my question just to end this, I would bring up J.J. Nelson of the Cardinals. Now, I don't know how he can fit in with those other three wide receivers and Michael Floyd and John Brown. He obviously won't play as much of the underneath slot like Larry Fitzgerald does, and with obviously targets going to David Johnson. But I just really liked J.J. Nelson's game when he's in there, especially as a big play threat, high variance player, just one of the fastest players in the league in an offense that loves to attack vertically.
Let me say something about him. If a dude gets hurt in that receiver core, J.J. Nelson is the guy. It's not Jerron Brown. Yeah, watch out.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. As you know, there's a companion episode to this podcast. It should have been downloaded with this one. We talk about the NFC North and the NFC East. And talking about podcasts, you can find us on Audio Boom. You can find us on Stitcher. You can find us on Spotify, Google Play. The great Tess Quinlan put us on all those platforms. And specifically, iTunes. If you do listen to us on iTunes, please, please, please rate and review the podcast. It takes 1 minute, and it helps us out tremendously. I'll actually be on vacation next week, so the great Roto Pat and Ray Summerlin will hold down the fort while I'm gone. They are awesome whenever they're on the podcast, and so it is in good hands. And when we get back, Evan and I are going to do some awesome preseason podcast work for you preseason DFSers out there. So until next time, talk to you soon.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.